Hello, and welcome back to We Are the Weirdos, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I'm your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and I'm joined by my sister, Lacey Mason. How are you doing today, Lacey?
Peachy keen. Hey, weirdos.
So, today, we are going to be talking about a modern cult classic. It was considered a flop when it was released in 1995, but found a second life on home video. And now has a devout following, ourselves included. Today we are talking about Empire Records. So, Lacey, do you remember the first time you saw Empire Records?
I do. I think I do. And normally I don't. But my high school boyfriend and I rented it from Leisure Time. And apparently it was because we both thought the same guy was cute. And it became me and Bub's, like, go-to movie.
I was just about to ask. I was like, which gay boyfriend is this?
Yeah, hey, would you like to narrow it down from 50 to 1?
Oh, I don't remember the first time. I feel like I watched it with you. Like, I watched it on your recommendation years ago, but I don't remember when.
I love it.
I do, too. Did you rent it for Ethan Embry?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay. There's a lot of cute boys in it, but
yeah, he is my heart. He always will. Ever since like Dutch, I was like a little kid and I was like, holy crap. I just loved him.
He holds up too. He still looks good.
Really good. Yeah.
So before we get into talking about the movie, we're going to talk about the background like we always do. But before we get into like the meat of the movie, I just wanted to issue a trigger warning. Because this is a lighthearted comedy, but there is a storyline involving a suicide attempt that will be talked about. So if that makes you uncomfy, just be forewarned. And also, full disclosure, I did not take notes while I watched the movie this last time, this most recent time. I ordered it on Blu-ray, and I just watched it and just sat and enjoyed it. And I didn't take notes, I just watched it because it had been a while. And there are about a million characters and a million things happening in this movie at all times. So the outline I did is really rough and covers about like, I would say 99% of the flick. but I definitely forgot shit. So at any point, feel free to interrupt me. And if I leave something out that you want to talk about, cause I'm sure I have, it's fun. It's goofy, but it's dense. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah. But which none of it too deep that you can't keep up. Like
exactly. It's so funny because Mom has never seen it and she was in the room like she usually is where she's not really watching it. She's just like around while it's on. And at one point she turns to me and goes, so is this movie about anything or or something like that? Like, does anything happen in this movie? I was like, no, not really. Like a lot happens, but it just kind of is a day. but that's not entirely true. That's not being fair, but it's that kind of, you know, moment in time type movie.
Yeah. And it does feel that way sometimes. Like mm-hmm. sometimes they're gabbing and it's like, oh.
it gives me Kevin Smith vibes.
Yeah. Yeah. Dialogue-y.
Yeah. The film was actually written by a woman whose name I was going to look up to see how you pronounce, and I forgot to do it. Fuck.
Damn it, Hillary.
I know. It's her name's Carol Heikkinen. Heikkinen. Oh, there's so many I's and K's and E's, dude. It's like. It's Heikkinen. Heikkinen. We're going to go with that.
How do you, so like if you search for it, how do you find the pronoun? Do you have to type that? How do you pronounce this?
I was going to try to find an interview with her or something on YouTube and try to find someone saying it. And I forgot to do that. Carol also wrote, we're going to affectionately just call her Carol. We're on a first name basis with the Carol because we're there. She also wrote The Thing Called Love and Center Stage. Have you ever seen Center Stage?
Once, I think, but I don't think it was my thing.
Dude, I watched it for the first time a few weeks ago, and woof. It is the most batshit. That movie was so insane. Like, I literally had to, I kept stopping it and rewinding it and calling mom into the room so she could watch. I was like, this movie is bonkers.
The Thing Called Love, isn't that a Sandy Bullock movie?
No, it's, do you remember the girl who played Princess Daisy in the live action Mario Brothers movie? And she played adult Amy in Little Women.
Okay, I see her. But she is too in that movie. There's her big old face in the back.
Is she? Oh, I'll be named.
Dermot McDooney and Sandra Bullock and River Phoenix. Hey!
Okay.
It's got some faces in it. I might have to watch that.
Yeah, me too. But yes, this is Sir Carol. This is Carol's second movie of the three, I think. What?
What? McDooney, I'm so stupid. Is it Mulrooney? MacRooney?
Mulroney?
Mulroney, M-L-U-R, okay.
I thought you were saying it wrong just to be funny. You literally didn't know how to say it.
I couldn't think.
Oh, that's funny.
I just call him Dirty Steve.
Why?
Because that's his name in, oh shit. Is it the Billy the Kid movie or is it Tombstone?
Oh, I don't really
know. Oh, Young Guns. Yes, he's in Young Guns, and his name's Dirty Steve, and that's just how we just called him.
That's funny.
Any crap.
Any crap.
Carol Heikenschmegger.
Carol Heineken. Heimlich maneuver. She based the script on her experience working at a Tower Records in Arizona, which is a great concept. I always wanted to write a screenplay. If my time there hadn't been so fucking traumatizing, I probably would have. I wanted to write a screenplay based on my working at a used bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to kind of be like a cross between Clerks and Empire Records. And I never did it because if I had fonder memories ultimately of being there, I probably would, but I don't have that fond of memories of being there. I have a lot of funny anecdotes that could make for a good movie, but I'm just.
Well, yeah, to do it. You could take something traumatic and make it funny.
A healthy person could. I couldn't.
No, see, I don't agree because that's how I deal. Mm. I take bad things and make them funny, and that's how I survive. And I am definitely not healthy.
I mean, I do that to some extent to some things, but most of the time I try to like erase them from my memory. So that's why I have such a bad memory and don't remember people and events because if they hurt, I'm just like, I don't remember that. That didn't happen.
Oh, I feel you. I feel you. The last 5 years, I don't fucking know. I don't remember none of it.
It's all blur. Yeah, because of that time, it just happens in like weird chunks. Like I got a notification on Facebook that Julie and I have been friends for 15 years. 15 years. That's like half my life. I've had the same best friend, which is good, obviously, but it's just like, it doesn't feel like it's been that long. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I've been with friends with my bestie for like 25 years.
That's true.
And we weren't even friends as little kids. Oh, God, I'm old.
You were kind of little kids.
I was like 14 when I met her. 13 or 14. Yeah.
Yeah. Empire Records. I just spaced and was staring at my computer screen like, what else are you talking about? Oh, okay. Anyway, so there was a bidding war for the script for Empire between New Regency and Warner Brothers, with New Regency winning by offering Carol $325,000 up front and an additional $200,000 if the film was made. She was also to receive 1% of any soundtrack royalties and 5% of merchandise sales. In a kind of sad twist of fate, 2 days after greenlighting Empire Records, the Regency exec Michael Nathanson was approached with the script for Clueless, and he turned it down because he already had, quote, a teen movie on
deck. Whoops.
Yeah, and then Clueless turned out to be a huge financial success, and Empire completely bombed. And when I say completely bombed, I mean, bad. The film had a budget of $10 million.
Wow.
Guess how much it made?
One.
Not even a half.
Oh!
$303,841.
Nobody was anybody in that movie at the time.
Yeah. They were just like, it's a bunch of hot young people. People will go see it. Nope. No one went. And also, can we talk about how that budget had to have been, like, a large chunk of it had to have been music licensing rights, right?
Had to be, because the movie is full of good shit.
Right. And, like, it otherwise wouldn't have cost that much. There's nothing in it. There's no explosions. There's no huge stars. There's no, you know, like, where else would that money have gone?
Yeah.
The exterior shots were filmed in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is cool. And then the interiors were filmed in Hollywood. And the movie takes place almost entirely at the record store, except for like one sequence. And according to the internet, it's supposed to take place in Delaware. I don't know if the movie actually ever says that. Where they're
I call bullshit.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, you would, okay, maybe, but like you would never get that assumption.
Yeah. I don't know how they know that. If they have, someone must have insider knowledge that it's supposed to be Delaware, but it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't, whatever. Especially since it was inspired by a record store in Arizona.
Yeah.
I don't know. They just arbitrarily picked some like New England location, I guess. But in my mind, it'll take place in North Carolina because I said so. So let's get into the plot. Oh no. I'm sitting in the dining room and I'm watching one of our outside cats stalk a cardinal.
Run!
I know. I'm like, fly, birdie, fly. That's the dumb one. He won't catch anything.
Got to be an orange one then.
Yeah. Well, no, actually the dumbest one is Neville, but oh, so close. But then there's a dumber of the two orange ones and it's the dumb orange one.
No.
He's so fat. He's so funny. Anyway. So our story begins with the character Lucas, who has been tasked by his manager Joe to close the store for the first time. And Joe has given him simple instructions. Count the money twice, and don't touch his beer, his cigars, or his drumsticks. And Lucas promptly breaks all of these rules. while in Joe's office touching the things he's not supposed to, he finds paperwork that implies that Empire Records is going to be sold to a national chain called Music Town. And alarmed by this possibility, Lucas takes that day's deposit, which is like $9,000, and rides his motorcycle to Atlantic City. I forget the guy's name who plays Lucas. He's a that guy. Like, he's,
I know, Rory Cochran.
What else has he been in?
I just pulled that name out of my ass and I hope to God it's right. Yeah. I only say that because he is one of my favorite characters in Dazed and Confused. And for some reason, that name sticks with me. He's the stoner guy, the real long-haired stoner guy.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Is that the name? I win $1 million if I got that right.
I don't know. I usually have all that shit pulled up, but I don't today.
Rory Cochran. Okay, well, he's old and fat, old and fat. Yay! I was right.
Go you.
Wow.
Is the
kid I just forgot algebra, but that's okay.
Does the kid that plays Eddie in Dazed and Confused too? Or am I making
I
that up?
think so.
Okay.
I think so. And side note, I thought that guy's name was Walt until I watched it again today because that's what it says on his shirt. So
That's fair.
I was writing down names like before I even watched it to see what I could remember. And I was like, I know there was a guy named Walt, and his name isn't Walt. He's just wearing a shirt that says that.
Like you do, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny. So Lucas goes to Atlantic City and he gambles at a craps table. And though at first he doubles the money, he then promptly loses all of it because he's a fucking idiot. There's like so many different ways he could have done this. He could have like fronted money that he had, you know what I mean? Like whatever he had to start and then gamble that and build up. And then if he lost it, then the store wouldn't have lost anything. He could have like just gambled some of it and then stopped when he doubled. Like he just completely I have never gambled, but I at least have some sense of strategy, and he had none.
No.
Not very bright. So $9,000 gone. I also have never, you've been like a manager at a store before, right? Is $9,000 like a obscene amount of money for one day, or am I crazy?
It is for fucking Delaware. No,
Have no.
that's a lot of money. That's because I mean, at Napa, a heavy day for them would be like $6,000-$7,000, and most of that is not in cash. I mean,
Yeah.
which we're talking a big year difference, but yeah, most of that's going to be paper, credit
Right.
card.
And they're selling fucking like car parts and shit. These motherfuckers are selling cassettes. Like,
Yeah, right.
jeez. Anyway, I've never had a frame reference because I've worked retail, but I've never been a manager and have done like end of day type numbers. Not really. So I've like, I
Yeah,
don't
that's a lot of money.
know. So the next morning, Lucas's coworkers, AJ, and Mark played by Ethan Embry. AJ, I don't think is anybody. I don't think I've seen him in anything else.
I was gonna ask you because I don't think I have either.
I don't know. He's pretty, but whatever.
He's the only person that isn't in another like huge movie for me.
Yeah. That's why I didn't even write down his name in my notes. I'm just like, whatever. AJ. AJ and Mark find Lucas behind the store on his motorcycle, and quickly deduce that Lucas has fucked up and done something with last night's money. And Lucas has developed an almost zen-like attitude in the face of his error, which is actually not uncommon. You know when like something so fucked up happens and you freak out so bad that you loop all the way back around to calm?
That's me when it's big stuff. But like if I lose my phone or something that means nothing that isn't consequential in life at all, I will
Oh, I have
lose
a complete
fucking
meltdown.
mind. Yep. I was thinking that. I was like, this is exactly what I would do. I would just be numb. I would just be la la la.
He says something zen and weird and then takes off on his motorcycle, and AJ and Mark are just like, yikes. So they go into the store, Joe, played by the manager, Joe, played by Anthony LaPaglia, who has been in everything. Everyone knows who Anthony LaPaglia is. And Joe gets phone calls from the bank and the store's owner, Mitch, about the missing deposit from the night before. And AJ and Mark feign ignorance very poorly. They're like, oh, what's wrong, Joe? And Joe realizes that Lucas has done something with the money. We then meet Corey, played by Liv Tyler, and Gina, played by Renee Zellweger. There are a whole three movies. She's been in a million things, but there are only three movies that Renee Zellweger has been in that I like because I cannot stand
I knew we were going to get into this. I knew we were.
I like this, Chicago, and Down with Love. Otherwise, if she's in it, I will probably not watch it. I watched,
Same, same. I cannot even sit through Jerry Maguire. I will put a fucking hot something in my eye before I even attempt to.
thank you. Mom's been watching that show with her in a fat suit, and I can't even be in the room. I'm just like, oh God, fuck off, Renee Zellweger.
About Pam or something like that. Yeah. I've seen. No, thank you.
Yeah, no.
She does look hot in this movie, though, I think.
Yeah, yeah, she does.
The greasy, dirty butt thing works for her.
Yeah. We're going to do Down with Love someday on this show, too.
Yes.
Yeah, someday.
And it's on something I pay for. What is it?
I think it's on HBO Max right now.
Max or Paramount, one of the two, yeah.
One, two. I've also sat through, I also voluntarily sat through the Beatrice Potter movie that she's in, but that's just because Ewan McGregor is in that as well. So sometimes you can't fight what you love. I've watched a lot of bullshit for Ewan McGregor. Anyway, so Gina picks Corey up for work and comments on how Corey is an overachiever. She's going to Harvard. She stayed up late and baked cupcakes. She's clearly a bit of a goody two shoes. She's coming into work early because it's Rex Manning Day. Rex Manning is a fading pop star. Who would you compare him to?
Oh, like, God.
I was kind of thinking like the guy from Partridge Family. What the fuck's his name?
David. Oh, jeez.
There's so many like real life analogs you can compare him to.
Davy Jones?
Yeah, Davy Jones is a good example, because like he used to be on a TV show back in the day, and he was like a teen heartthrob, but he still records albums, but he's just fading rapidly.
He looks like Barry Manilow or something.
Yeah. he was on an old show called The Family Way, but now he's kind of past his prime, and he's coming to Empire to sign autographs and promote his new album, and Corey loves him. And she has decided that she's going to offer Rex her virginity. Now, I was thinking about this. I was like, would I do something like this? Would I be ballsy enough to do something like this? If like,
fuck yes, you would.
If I look like Liv Tyler, 100%.
Think about how good you looked at 18 and you got the chance to meet the one.
I didn't know how hot I was at 18, so maybe not. True. But I had no idea. But yeah, like if Chris Kirkpatrick came to like a record signing at Half Price Books, I'd been like, "Woo!"
I just pictured Lance showing up and me being like, "Hey," and me being like, "Hey."
No, I was.
What's your boyfriend's name over there? Can we hook up? Yeah.
I was thinking about that when I was taking my notes. I was like, I'm gonna ask Lacey if she would do this, and then I was thinking of like who our big people would have been when we were young. And I was just like, yeah, but half of ours are gay, so it still wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, but then there's like Eminem. Like, I would have called Angie's eyes out to get to him. Like,
Hi, Angie. Does Angie listen to our podcast?
No, the fucking bitch. I can't say that she's never, but I can't get any of my friends to do it.
Yeah,
there's too many people, and we're just like, fuck it, fuck, fuck, mother, mother, fuck, fuck, mother, mother, fuck, fuck. And it's like, I can't. And I'm like, fuck you, children. And fuck you, grandma. Listen to the podcast.
I explicitly, and I rate all of my episodes explicit for that very reason. I'm like, I don't want anyone to go into this thinking that we're not going to be like, fuck you, fuck, 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 fuck.
And you know, anybody that's been on my Facebook more than 3 seconds, no, that's what's happening.
So I take back my hi, Angie. Take back. So Gina teases Corey. She even licks her Rex Manning album, which, you know, is gross. But ultimately, she encourages Corey's sex plan. And it's implied throughout the movie that Gina is kind of a slut. So she's kind of the polar opposite of virginal sweet Corey.
But how old is Gina?
I don't know. I mean, they're probably all around 18, 19, 20 age.
I assume. Yeah. Because they say for sure that AJ has an apartment. Because he's like, I can't afford my rent. Mm-hmm. So I know he's not living at home. But you don't really get Well, I guess Deb and Marco don't live at home.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. They're probably all... Yeah, I would say they're all pretty young. Except for Burko, but we'll get into that. AJ, Mark, Gina, and Corey proceed to open the store. And they play a game with M&Ms to determine who gets to pick the music for the morning. And Mark wins. And it's so funny because I don't know the name of the song that's playing, but everyone, including AJ, is singing along. But AJ still exercises his one daily vetoing power to change the CD. I'm like, you were just singing it. During their little opening montage. I was like, you like that song. Why would you veto? But he's like, listen to this. We'll like rot your brain. It was funny when I worked at the bookstore, the only music we could play was stuff that was available for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And it would always suck if there was like a CD that one of us really liked, because anyone that is shopping can come up and be like, hey, can I buy the CD that's playing? And we'd be like, damn it.
No, you can't.
There was also a lot of hiding and destroying of CDs that we didn't like.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how many people, I mean, I guess it makes sense if you're depositing a lot of cash, but can we talk about how many people they have on a shift?
Oh, yeah. But that is, for that kind of store, that makes sense. That's some, I mean, at the height of our day at the bookstore, we would like open with like three or four, then have like two mid shifters and then close with three or four. So in the middle of the day, there was like fucking 10 people there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, and also Gina, it was Rex Manning day, and or not Gina, Corey wasn't even supposed to be there.
Corey wasn't supposed to be there. Yeah.
But she ends up on the register anyway. I'm like, you're not even supposed to be there. Mitchell Beck, the owner of the store, arrives to collect the missing deposit, and Joe covers for Lucas and gives Mitch a deposit bag that's just filled with receipts to buy time. At this point, Mom asked why Joe was covering for Lucas, and I explained that A, Joe is like a father to Lucas, and they are very close, and B, it would reflect poorly on Joe, too, to admit what happened.
Right, to say that he let that kid do all that stuff, right. Yeah.
So while Joe frantically looks around the back room, which makes me laugh, as if Lucas just like hid the money somewhere. He's like looking under the couch cushions and shit. AJ confides in him that he's in love with Corey and that he wants to confess his love to her today. And he asks Joe for advice. And Joe's basically just like, just tell her. Like, he doesn't really have any of that deep of wise words. He's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Get out of my face.
Yeah, a little busy. Lucas returns with a bucket of quarters. He offers them to Joe, who just smacks it out of his hand and is setting quarters everywhere. And like later on, there's a scene where AJ's like gluing all the quarters to the floor, which is so obnoxious. And Lucas is still very zen. He doesn't show any remorse or anything. He just keeps repeating that everything will work out somehow, which just enrages Joe more. So Joe sits Lucas down and forbids him from leaving the break room couch. Another employee, Deb, arrives. Deb is played by Robin Tooney from The Craft. I love her.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this movie is the reason that she has such a bad wig in The Craft.
Oh my God, that makes total sense.
Yeah. Gina and Corey comment on the fact that Deb hates them, but at least Gina has the sense to hate her back. Deb makes a beeline to the employee bathroom and locks herself in and impulsively shaves her head. I have a question. Why are there clippers in the employee bathroom?
I asked that in this movie 400 times. Why do you have this here right now?
And like, that is classic cinematic shorthand for a girl who's clearly going through it, impulsively mm-hmm. cutting or shaving her hair. I'm gonna cut together like a whole montage of girls just like having a breakdown and cutting their hair.
Well, we've all thought about it, but few of us have gone that far. But she looks good.
She looks great. I've done it, but mine was very slow. See? And as someone who spent most of the pandemic on TikTok, I can attest that the mental breakdown head shaving has been very in vogue the last couple years.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And, like, not to imply that every femme-presenting person who chops off all their hair is going nuts, but mine, like I said, mine was more of, like, a prolonged process. Like, the crazier I got, I just kept going shorter and shorter and shorter. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I finally left Ohio, my hair was completely buzzed. Like,
see, I never did that. I just kept dyeing it until it just fell out. Like,
that's the second thing that that girls do. Anytime there's a big change, you got to change your hair.
Crazy, isn't it?
Well, so Deb emerges from the bathroom and AJ immediately clocks the bandages on her wrists. The night before, Deb had attempted suicide. And making this the first of two movies in a row where Robin played someone who attempted to take their own life, which is weird. And we find out that fellow employee and rock musician Burko recently broke up with Deb, but she insists that's not what made her try to unalive herself.
You keep saying Burko. I thought it was Marco. Jesus.
It's Burko. There's Mark, and then there's Burko.
I've got Mark and Marco. Oh my god, I thought, how original, but okay.
We see a young guy in the store stealing CDs, and Lucas notices him. And there's a great touch here that I love, where Lucas changes out of his motorcycle boots into tennis shoes in preparation. He's like, "Yeah, we're doing this." And he confronts the shoplifter, who tries to bolt. And Mark screams at the top of his lungs, like, "Let's draw more attention to it. Shoplifter!" And there's a great chase sequence through and around the store. And eventually Lucas hides in a car and opens the door right as the shoplifter runs past. And he knocks him the fuck out and drags him back inside. And apparently when filming the scene, his stunt double ran into the car door so hard that he cracked a rib.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that sucks.
Well, that's doing your job.
Dedication. The kid won't give his real name and just identifies himself as Warren Beatty. So they just call him Warren through the whole movie. AJ and Lucas take Polaroids of him and critique the CDs he tried to steal. The kid that plays quote unquote Warren is a total that guy. His name's Brendan Sexton III. And he's been in a bunch of stuff. But if you put a gun to my head and asked me to tell you what, I couldn't tell you.
Mm-mm.
As a matter of fact, let's look. I have it pulled up now. Let's see. What else?
You skipped over something I wanted to rant about, I think.
Oh, go for it.
We find out that Corey is accepted to Harvard while she's at work. Mm. Because her sister comes in and everything. And she gives her this electric bill fucking letter from Harvard, apparently, that she gets accepted to Harvard. And it's like a little page. She pulls it out. It's a one-note thing. Come on now. Would it not have been like this big package if you're getting accepted to Harvard?
I think you have a special edition Blu-ray because that's not on mine.
Oh, really? Well, I just have a DVD.
Well, special edition DVD. Because that scene's not, we don't see that scene. We see Corey getting flowers from her dad with a note that says, like, congratulations to my Harvard girl or something like that.
Oh, yeah, totally. And mine, her sister, who, by the way, is so goofy looking. Like, if you had a sister look like that and you're Liv Tyler, like, I would feel so bad for her. But
anyway, she look like?
Scary beyond all reason? I don't know. Like, just toe up, like hadn't brushed her hair or teeth, nothing. And it was just like, it was weird. But yeah, she just brings her just like this little envelope, and she opens it, and nobody knows whether she's getting accepted or not. And it's literally like one little piece of paper. And I'm thinking, oh, come on.
Yeah, it would be a big thing. Oh, okay. So Brendan Sexton, the third, he was in Welcome to the Dollhouse. That's what I always think of. Another movie we need to do on here. Black Hawk Down, Boys Don't Cry. He was in Russian Dolls. Russian Doll, rather, plural or singular. Yeah, he's a bunch of shit. But Warren kind of just hangs out in the back room with everyone as they wait for the cops to show up, which takes forever. The worst cops in the world.
Like hours.
Hours, yeah. I don't even remember at what point in the day he gets toted off, but it's sometime after Rex shows up, which is what happens next. So Rex Manning and his assistant Jane arrive. Rex is played by Maxwell Caulfield from Grease 2. Great casting, because he was indeed very beautiful when he was young.
It's like, true. Behind my charade. You could forgive his horrible singing because you're like, you know, yeah, pants.
He's beautiful. Yeah. Like, can't sing, can't act very well, but pretty, very pretty. And they've made him look like a real sleazeball now, though. He's got bad fake tan and douchey clothes and like a weird long, like Lacey said, Barry Manilow type mane of hair that he thinks was recently cut too short. And he's all self-conscious about it. I'm just like, no, it needs to be much shorter.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did you a favor. And Jane is played by Debbie Mazar, who I love. You don't like Debbie?
She freaks me out.
She looks like a vintage Barbie doll, and I'm obsessed with her.
Is that what it is? I think she looks like a serpent or something.
Look up like the original Barbie doll. She looks exactly like
I see know. It. I can see it. I honestly do, but her eyes just freak me out. She's a pretty woman, but they just go with another creature entirely. They're not even human. I don't know. I guess they belong on a Barbie, so that's why it's unnatural.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I always think of this movie too, because she has a really distinct style, like a very like vintage pinup-y Guidette type style, yes. Usually. But in this, she has that really short coppery hair, and she just looks so different than what she usually does. And she and Anthony LaPaglia were in So I Married an Axe Murderer together. So this was their second movie together.
I don't remember her being in that movie.
Yeah, she was his
girlfriend. Hey, Paisan!
I love that fucking movie. Just the other day, I was on TikTok, and there was a girl who could like recite the Scottish dad's whole conspiracy theory thing. Like, who are the members of this elite club? The Queen, the Vatican, the Colonel. I love that movie. We need to do it too. Oh, my list is growing.
I might actually have that one.
I'm pretty sure we do too. Dottie is clawing the curtains. I'm going to kill her. What a bitch. Right in front of me. Just claw, 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 claw. Little monster. Anyway, Debbie's not in this movie very much. I wish she was in it more. But so, like I mentioned, Rex is promoting his new album, and his current single is a song called Say No More, Mon Amour, which all the characters mock throughout the movie. The
it
Rex
makes me wonder what I have that you don't have.
I know.
Saw that you don't, you know what I mean?
Who fucking knows at this point?
Because I feel like they show Deb a lot. Not like for long periods of time, but they're always going back to whatever random thing she's doing. Which takes me back to the employee thing. None of them are ever actually fucking doing anything. They're doing their art. Or whatever, shaving their head. Yeah, whatever.
Right. Good thing there's 20 of them there.
Exactly.
So the Rex Manning music video for Say No More, Mon Amour was shot on Wrightsville Beach, North Carolina, in one day. And it was shot prior to principal photography, and it was intended to just to be like a 17 second little dance move piece for the actors to make fun of, like that weird little kick thing he does. It was supposed to be just that. However, the music video director shot for the entire day and gave the producers a 4 minute 30 second music video.
Oh my God.
That's dedication. Could you imagine being Maxwell Caulfield and thinking you're just going to show up and do a little dance, and they're like, all day. Whole video.
I wonder if you can find the whole video.
It's probably on your fucking DVD.
Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, they do show a good chunk of it in the movie too, just in little blips.
Yeah.
I'm having so much fun watching this cat try to catch birds. It's so funny. Sorry to change the subject, but like Gary's trailer is right in front of the window, and there's like a puddle of water in it, and so birdies are in there like bathing. And every once in a while, I just see the cat jump in the trailer, like wah, and they just fly away. I should really do this podcast with my back to the
I've never had this much freedom with a podcast before. I'm not hooked to a cord or a wall or nothing.
Lexi's recording this, just walking around her house.
I am. I'm walking through the hallway right now.
Oh, speaking of, I, as people who listen to this podcast know, I always bitch that I need new equipment. Well, since I got this new job, I got myself a laptop. Doesn't work. Spent $250 on a brand new HP that I got from Walmart.
You get the
And
protection though?
no, but there's like a 90-day warranty through HP.
Yeah, true.
Like I finally got it to turn on, but it'll only turn on being plugged in. It won't hold a battery at all. The battery won't charge at all.
Lame.
Yeah, I'm really sad. Anyway, back to my crappy little tiny Chromebook. So Rex is a condescending jerk to the employees and his fans. Oh, I totally skipped over like the best line of the movie where Mark is like, "Can't be sad, not today, not on Rex Manning Day,"
Not on Rex Manning Day.
which has become a meme. And Rex Manning Day is April 8th, and you know, fucking 20 years later, you still have Rex Manning Day trending on Twitter every year.
Is that actually shown in the movie, or did somebody just arbitrarily pick a day?
Someone must have arbitrarily picked a day because whoever decided it was in Delaware.
Bastards, man.
Maybe there's like a copy of the script available somewhere where this information is held. I don't know. He's awful to everybody, including his fans, which mostly consists of old women and gay men. So Corey is set. What?
Same. Sorry, go ahead. All my fans are old women and gay men.
Samesies. So Corey is set on seducing Manning during his lunch break. So she goes to Joe and demands that he let her bring him his lunch. Like straight up screams at him. He's just like, okay. So let's talk about this seduction scene.
Well, first off, do you think she's hot?
Liv Tyler?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, do I have eyeballs? Oh, Lacey, you're not that heterosexual.
No, it's one of the, you know me, it's very Freudian.
Who does she look like?
I don't want to ruin it for
Tell me.
Something about those, it's as long as she's got her mouth closed, she's fine, but when she's talking, I see gums and teeth, and that's all I see. And can you think of anybody with long brown hair and gums and teeth?
You are insane.
I'm sorry, it's my brain. It's not my fault.
You're wrong, and I won't accept this.
I'm glad that you don't have to, but there's something when she's doing this whiny bullshit like she does with her mouth hanging open. I'm just like, okay, Mona, yep, said it. I said it.
Oh boy. Good thing no one listens to this
Yep.
podcast.
I've already taken everybody else down. Talked about the grandmas and the parents, and got to go on to the cousins.
Holy man, that's funny. I just want the record to show that I didn't say it. Lacey did.
I really am glad nobody listens to this because I just show the best of myself. I really do.
Oh, that's funny. So, okay. First off, so Corey gives him his food and then she like gets undressed, right? Now, if you were planning on seducing someone, wouldn't she make the effort to wear matching underwear?
I know where you're going with this, but there's a reason for this. I figured this out. For one, the bra that she's wearing is not hers. The bra that she's wearing, she gets from Gina, which I don't know how the fuck they're wearing the same bra, but whatever. Gina gives her the bra to sexy up what she's got. She's 17. She is the goody two shoes, and she doesn't have anything that matches that. And the white cotton fucking panties is just there to symbolize this is a fucking child trying to seduce a 70-year-old man.
Okay, fair. Here's my question. That bra thing, is that another scene that's not in my version, or was it just extrapolating?
No, she says it when she picks her up. This is, I get late, or this is like my lucky red bra. It always works for me. She says it.
Yeah, that's not in my version.
Girl!
I know. That's what I get for buying the cheap $7 Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wow, it does make sense, yeah. But even then, I would have been like, I'm not going to put that bra on. It doesn't match my underwear.
I'd have taken the panties off. If I was going for the gold, I'd have just been like, ta-da! Because those are some sad little kid-looking panties.
They are. It's very
They might creepy. As well have a day of the week on them.
Or like Tweety Bird or something.
Yeah.
Ugh. And so she asks to have sex with him, and he just like undoes his fly and is like, yeah, rock and roll.
No, wait, no. He says, I hope you like blue cheese, and grabs the salad dressing that she leaves out for him as though he's going to use it as a topping.
Ew, that's also not in my version. Ew!
You have the worst version. And I remember things from seeing it originally, so I must have, like, the original cut, like the director's cut or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the blue cheese thing is disgusting. But it works better because it shows how much he doesn't want to do it. Like, he's trying literally to make her go back out that door.
Do you think so? Or is he just that much of a tease?
No, yeah, because it works after he says the blue cheese thing, and he's still eating his food. And he makes a comment like, thank God, or about time, or something about couldn't hack it, or so, I don't remember. But yeah, he's not interested in it at all.
That's so funny, because in my version, he just kind of like leans back and undoes his pants, and he's just like, yeah, let's go. And that makes her run off, which makes her seem even more, you know what I mean? Like she must have been a man. With your version, it makes sense, because, ooh, that's disgusting. But in like the cut version, it's like she was expecting him to be sweet and romantic and sexy, and he was just like, ooh.
Yeah.
So she goes up to the rooftop to cry and is met by AJ. He's up there working on the Empire Records big neon sign that's not working. And AJ apparently can't read the room because she's
crazy. Nobody feels sorry for AJ. Like, no. She's like, not right now. She's crying and huddling in the corner and shit. And he's just like, I just have to bare my soul right now because I'm a selfish bastard.
Such a dude thing. And she even sees it coming when he starts talking. She's just like, oh, God, not don't do this right now. Like, I can't handle this. Poor Corey. And she's just too overwhelmed. And when he like admits that he loves her, she just kind of turns him down. Meanwhile, both Joe and Burko try to reach out to Deb, who is just
Wait
doing
a minute. She turns him down, but she chases him. She chases after him.
Does she?
Yes. I don't think Hillary watched this movie.
Yes, I fucking did, dude. I just have like the shortest version.
I just watched it like literally like an hour ago. I finally finished it.
Oh, well.
Well, hey, I'm fresh. I'm freshy fresh. How about you?
I watched it like A week ago.
He storms off like a crybaby and goes to do his art because, you know, he's not on fucking shift or anything. And she's like, AJ, you know, it's really sweet and everything, but what we have is more than that. You're my very best friend, and that's more special than love. And he's just like, yeah, right. If you say so, liar. And he storms off.
What a baby.
Yeah.
So yes, then we get a couple scenes of people trying to talk to Deb, and she's just doing inventory and trying to ignore everyone. She keeps herself closed off and just wants to be left alone. There's nothing worse than having like a deep, not everyone can relate to this, and like not to get dark, but to have like a deeply traumatic, awful night and then having to fucking get up and do retail the next morning. Oh my God, like the hellish, it's hell. It's
I'm
absolute
pretty
hell.
sure everybody can relate to that in one way, shape, or form.
Well, maybe not as traumatic as like I'm gonna die. Like
Yeah. No, I agree. Like what I think is normal, most people be like, are you
yikes.
medicated? Yeah. What, are you okay?
Right. We're a different breed.
We are.
Now, Burko is played by a guy named Coyote Shivers,
Oh, Lord.
who at the time this movie was filmed was married to Liv Tyler's mom.
Does that explain the stupid hair?
A, yes. B, like clearly Burko is older than everybody, but not by that much. So could you imagine having a ste your stepdad being your co-star and like your contemporary?
Ew.
Yeah, how weird. Liv Tyler's mom, man. She ain't fucking around. She's, yeah. I saw the cutest TikTok the other day. It was Liv Tyler and Steven Tyler together at like Disney World Paris or something, and they have an Armageddon ride. And she was filming, and he was like by her po the poster of her and was like being all cute. It was really cute.
Oh, and she was like, "Dad, I'm over here. What? Come on. Come on. We forgot to put your leash back on."
Oh, that's fucked up.
The best of me, I'm telling you.
Oh, poor Steven Tyler.
I wonder how long your version is.
Not very.
'Cause mine's almost 2 hours long.
Yeah, mine's not. Yeah, I mean, when I was doing research, there's a bunch of diff discussions about different cuts and how much they cut from the original, and like the theatrical version is so much different and stuff. So yeah, that tracks that you have a something different than me.
Crazy.
They also say if, in my research, this is jumping the gun a little bit, but that like the original cut of the movie was supposed to take place over the span of 2 days, and they cut it down to one, which I call bullshit on because everyone's wearing the same clothes. I was like, that can't be right, but whatever. So by this point in the day, everyone knows about Lucas's little snafu with the money. And as a joke, Gina puts on a cover of I Want Money over the sound system to tease him. And this sets Joe off, and he reveals that Mitchell is planning on turning Empire Records into a music town, and that Joe had been saving up to buy into Empire to become a partner and save the store from being converted. But now he's going to have to use 9 grand of that money he saved up to cover for what Lucas did. So he's like passing out all the rigid rule sheet of Music Town employees to show them their fate. And needless to say, no one is happy. And the afternoon continues to spiral out of control. There's that great scene with Gina and Deb where they're like reading. Like Gina's like, I can't wear revealing clothing. He's like, you can't have any visible tattoos or piercings. And they're like, let's not fight, just rip. They're like
Just
tearing
rip.
up the whole page. And Corey blames Gina for the whole Rex thing, which is stupid. She blames her for encouraging her and implies that Gina was trying to make Corey be more like her, i.e., slutty. And Gina is rightfully pissed off by this, I feel like she's projecting. So to hurt Corey, Gina has sex with Rex, much to everyone's horror. Which is weird to me now understanding like the original cut where Rex didn't really feel like didn't really seem into Corey. Because don't you think Liv Tyler is prettier than Renée Zellweger?
No, because she gives off that
Well,
12-year-old vibe.
oh, well, maybe that's true.
I think, you can put off too much stank sometimes and turn someone off.
Yeah.
But I just think sometimes you can be too eager and it shows how juvenile you are. Maybe that just didn't work for him.
Yeah, that's good, I guess. At least it didn't do anything for him because that would have been creepy. Yeah,
I
that's fair.
cannot believe the blue cheese is cut. That makes no sense.
It completely changes the context of the scene. So AJ attacks Rex, who they then kick out of the store, and Corey wigs out on Gina. And in retaliation, Gina reveals to everyone that Corey has an amphetamine habit, and that's how she's able to stay up and study and accomplish so much. And she
Which they
takes.
allude to a couple times, but they don't really
Right.
say. She's got a little pill bottle.
Yeah. And she takes Corey's pills and pelts her with them as she mocks her. And Corey has a complete meltdown,
Oh,
which.
Jesse Spano meltdown.
Yeah. This is her I'm so excited moment. I always laugh at these scenes because, like, I wasn't taking anything prescription. I wasn't taking anything that strong. But yeah, I abused caffeine pills when I was younger. And I was so glad I never had my meltdown moment. I just, like, quietly decided that I was done.
Oh, I did. I only ever took caffeine pills one time, and that was the day I had my meltdown. And that was the day I decided I would never take one again. And I had mine at work too. Thank God I didn't get fired because that was a normal thing at the call center.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, or they were just happy that's all it was. They're just like, oh, it's not cocaine or anything? Okay.
Yeah, right. Just take a 20-minute smoke break, clock out, go walk around the block a couple times, come back to work. Okay.
That call center you worked at was a shit show, man.
I found out Brandon used to work there too, and that's all we do now. He's like, "Hey, you remember so and so? That's some fucked up shit." I'm like, "Yeah, I do."
So funny. So Gina leaves and Deb helps Corey calm down in the bathroom, and she's being uncharacteristically kind, clearly sympathizing with Corey's meltdown. So feeling extra endeared to Deb now, Corey organizes a mock funeral for her to show her how much her friends slash coworkers love her and would miss her if she were to die. And it's a kind thought, but the whole thing kind of devolves into people talking about everything but Deb. Like they're supposed to be gathered around talking about how much they love Deb, and they just talk about everything else.
I love how they just have the fucking everything. They have this big old light up cross that's covered in moss. And they have all these like wrought iron candle holders and 4,000 candles all over this record store, like you do.
Like you do. I never even thought about it. I
Satin
just
fucking cover over the thing. She threw this together in 15 minutes and they literally have a fucking funeral home in the back room.
So funny. I just always took it for granted. But yeah, you're right. What the fuck? Oh, that's so funny. Lucas talks about how Joe rescued him from an orphanage, which is really sweet. And Corey talks about missing Gina. She's been gone for like a half hour. She's like, I miss
Right.
Gina. And but Gina returns then. And Deb, pulling focus back, thankfully, unwraps her wrists and reveals that she tried to kill herself with a pink Lady Bic with daisies on it and a moisturizing strip. Ugh. Sucks.
Oh, it's so good because she's talking about it and she like drips a tear onto her satin funeral pillow. And it's just so touching.
Yeah. I love Robin. I love her so much. I wish she was in more stuff. I mean, she's in stuff. She's on TV a lot right now, but like, I want her back in movies. The funeral is interrupted by the return of Warren, who has come back to the store with a gun. And Deb fearlessly stares down Warren and his gun, and distracting and confusing him. And everyone tries to get Warren to admit that the reason he came back is because he actually likes all of them and just wants to work there too.
He's my favorite character, honestly. Like, I love all of them, but I love Warren.
He has, like, the best perspective because he's just like, you guys are all fucking crazy. I'm like, hey,
yeah, you're waving a gun telling everybody that they're crazy.
And he's not wrong.
Right.
But, like, Joe, like, offers him a job. But then the police towed him off again, you know, because he did bring a gun to a store, so. So Lucas tells Joe to call Mitch and tell him the truth about what happened and that Lucas will face the consequences. But everyone, including Jane, who quit working for Rex and has befriended Joe, who's just kind of around.
Her creepy ass just shows back up, too.
Yeah, she's like...
Like, right when the funeral's happening, you just see her and her snake eyes standing in the background, like, what's up?
Her snake eyes. Everyone pulls together their money in an attempt to help Lucas out, but they're still thousands of dollars short, obviously, because you can't just, like, root through your pockets and pull together $9,000.
They came up with, like, three awful fucking...
I know.
You guys.
Very impressive. But Mark has a stroke of genius, which is saying something, because it actually was really clever, and Mark is kind of a space cadet, so...
The whole Guar scene on your thing?
No, I totally forgot about the Guar scene.
Yeah, like, to help illustrate, like, Mark, what's his name? Eddie brings Mark in some special brownies, like, before his shift even starts. And Mark sits down to eat. He just says he puts extra sugar in them, but we all know. And he is sitting down and he's eating these brownies. And he starts to envision himself in the middle of this Guar video, in which he gets beaten up and awful things happen to him. Giant, I don't know, alien or something. But yeah, like, Mark's just totally ripped. He acts like a 12-year-old throughout the whole thing. He's horny as hell all the time. Like, making out with pictures or humping anything he would, you know, get near. Yeah. He saves the day when the cops are outside.
Yeah. He's kind of like a more wholesome Jay.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. It's so funny. Julie went to a Guar concert when we were in college, and I just remember her coming back, and her white t-shirt that she wore was just covered in fake blood. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
It'd be intense. I don't know if it'd be something for old people.
No, definitely not. But Mark has his stroke of genius, and he runs outside where there's a news crew reporting on Warren's holdup at the store. And he announces an impromptu concert / fundraiser that night at midnight. He says, damn the man, save the empire. Which I quote all the time. No one knows what I'm talking about. But Burko and his band, plus Gina, who has always wanted to sing in a rock band, they perform on the roof / marquee area above the store. The other employees sell art and buttons and merchandise. And Debbie just sits at a table with a sign that says, give me your money. And that works. And a huge crowd quickly forms in the street and fills the store, and they're able to raise the money to pay back Mitchell.
In so Delaware, in like 2 hours, they raise thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars with AJ's street art and a keg of beer. Okay.
I just keep thinking about that scene in, oh, shit. I forgot to put my phone away. Did my sound just fuck up? Okay, good. Usually when my phone goes off near my microphone, it fucks it up. But, I always think of this in Wayne's World when they're, like, in front of the green screen. And they're just like, Hi, we're in Delaware.
I'm in Delaware.
So Joe hands Mitchell the money and quits. And Mitchell, who hates the store and does not want to fucking deal with it anymore, offers to sell it to Joe for cheap. He looks at the big jar of money. He's just like, cheap. So I guess for just a few grand.
Well, this is only after he realizes that, because he tells Joe, tells him, fuck this, I'm done. I'm going to start my own store. And he's like, well, you don't have the money. And he's like, well, I don't, but I'll get it. And I'm going to take all my employees with me. And he just lets the guy run the store while all those people are in there. And then he just gives the hell up. After like 5 minutes, he doesn't even know how to run the register. And he's like, does anybody work here? And here comes Warren, who didn't get taken in, I guess. And he must have got dropped off around the corner.
Right.
Warren comes back in with his ID badge that they made for him.
He's like, I do. And it's funny because it's like a running gag throughout the whole movie that Mitchell does not give two shits about this store. Like he said, his grandfather, it used to be a store owned by his grandfather, and they sold like toilets and bidets and shit. And then his hippie of a dad turned it into a record store in the 50s. So yeah, Mitchell like does not give a shit. So he, you know, hands off the store to Joe. And back up on the roof, Corey tells AJ that she loves him back, but is frustrated with him for waiting so long to tell her and for letting his artistic talents go to waste. And he tells her that he's quit the store and has applied to attend an art school in Boston to be near her when she goes to Harvard. And she swoons in his arms and they kiss. And the large Empire Records sign that has been broken throughout the film finally lights up. And the movie ends with everyone dancing on the roof under the night sky and the neon Empire Records sign. And then during the credits, it's just Mark and Eddie sitting on the sidewalk talking about music.
I don't know if I buy the whole, I don't know. It feels like they just sweetened it up to close, to tie all the ends. Like her just being like, yeah, I was wrong. I've always loved you. I just didn't realize it. Let's do it. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I kind of understand, though, because it's one of those things of, like, we're taught that love is supposed to be, like, chaotic and, you know, crazy and fraught. So that sometimes when we, like, fall in love with our best friends, when it's easy and feels comfortable, we don't recognize that as love because we're taught that love is supposed to be so...
Yeah, she does kind of go into that, I guess, too.
Yeah. So, like, you know, I didn't realize that I loved you because you were my best friend. But that, and honestly, that's what true love should be. It should just be, it should be easy and it should just be your friend.
Yeah.
Not just your friend, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you were right when you said, like, there weren't any really big stars in it or anything, but it still blows my mind that this movie flopped. The music is so good. All the people are hot. It's funny. Oh my God, Robert. Can you hear that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Bob. Could you not? Cripes. Yeah, but only making $300,000 at the box office? Oof. I feel like marketing failed this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe something came out at the same time.
Maybe. I wonder when Clueless came out versus when. Let's see, Empire Records release date. Maybe it also just came out on like a shitty weekend. Yeah, it came out on September 22nd, 1995. Wow, Days and Confused was 2 years before that? I didn't realize it was that old. It came out in 93.
Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah.
And it should also be pointed out that like the year following this, Liv Tyler and Ethan Embry were in That Thing You Do together as well.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Clueless came out in July of 1995. Don't know. September is a weird time for a movie, I guess, but you wouldn't think it would have had a lot of competition.
Yeah.
That's a shame. Excuse me. Like I mentioned earlier, the movie was severely edited in post-production. Removing three significant characters and up to 40 minutes of footage. And like I said, apparently condensed from occurring over to 2 days into a single day, but I don't buy that. It might have been that in the shooting script, but I don't think it was ever shot to be that way. Edited or
Right.
no.
Right.
Yeah. Robert. But yeah, I've always loved this movie. I'm glad that I finally own it now. It's tough because I don't think there's anywhere to watch it for free right now, which is why I just
No.
haven't bought it.
Nope, there isn't.
We probably would have done this movie a lot earlier if it had been. But I finally was just it was Rex Manning Day a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I want to fucking do Empire, so I'm just gonna buy it.
Oh, there's a bee. Get outside, bee. Oh.
Is a bee in your house?
Yes, I left my damn window open. You think I'd learn? I'd rather have
Raccoons, bees.
the damn I'd rather have the bee, honestly.
Well,
He ain't
obviously,
bothered.
yeah, damn. So
Where'd he
funny.
go? Come on, man. Oh, whatever.
I was so sad. We were outside earlier helping mom load up her car, and there was this big bee, and I just thought it was like a big fluffy bumblebee, and mom and Gary killed it. I was like, no! But it was a carpenter bee. It's the kind that like eat the wood.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like tearing up the porch. And I was like, oh, that was a big fat bumblebee. Don't kill bees, kids. They're good for the environment.
Yeah, don't kill him.
Well, on that note, we always joke around here because anytime Abby and Kenny are over, Kenny will just be like out of nowhere, just be quiet for a minute. He'll be like, "Well, see
Yep.
ya."
Knee slap. Time to go.
But it's not even that. It's like even faster. It's just like, "Well, see ya." It's so funny. Just imagine if I ended the podcast like that. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Do you have any final thoughts on Empire Records?
No, but I guess if you can find a copy of it, make sure it's a good one.
That has the whole movie in it as opposed to whatever the bullshit I got.
I was gonna
Don't
say
buy
if
the
the
$7
shit
one.
you got was in the theater, then I could see why nobody would want to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're gonna have to look at the case when you get a chance, because I bet it says on your case that it's like the extra special blah 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 blah. My Blu-ray doesn't even really have special features on it.
Well, thanks to Sam for finding it. I looked for it 150 times, and it was exactly where it was supposed to be. And like we have like a one movie tower that's like the tower. So it was supposed to be there, but I was for some reason my brain was looking for a different colored case. So I just kept overlooking it. And I sat down almost to rent it because I was like, fuck it. And he's like, this one, dumbass? Oh yeah, thanks.
Nice. Thanks, Sam. Oh, well, I think that about wraps it up then. This podcast went all over the place. This is a good one.
Yeah.
Kind of
It
like the movie.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Go look in the episode description where you will find our Linktree link that will take you to our social media pages. Please follow us, share our posts, comment, DM us, interact with us. We love it. Also, in the episode description, you will find a link to our support page where you can help the pod with a one-time donation or sign up for a monthly patronage. It'd be a great help because I have to now buy a third laptop. sucks.
That's awful.
I know. Please recommend our show to your friends and come back and see us in the next episode. So, thank you again to Lacey for joining me.
No problem. Always fun.
And until next time, we are the Weirdos, Mister.